chase the frustration out of her brain. Being cold and shivering refocused her thoughts in a hurry, and for some reason put things in perspective. She didn't have to let this throw her. She'd carry on as usual, do her job, finish her training. Dear God, jumping out of a plane. And take her place on the team. She hadn't busted her butt all these months to blow it by boo-hooing over hurt feelings. So screw him. No matter how hateful he got, she wouldn't quit. She slept well that night, despite him. Still, when her phone dinged with a text at 5 o'clock the next morning, she wished she could have gotten another couple of hours in bed. Groaning, her heart pounding because what if something had happened to some of her family? She switched on the lamp and fumbled for the phone. Ah, hell. The text was from Levi, Ace, showing big and bold in the screen. She rubbed her eyes, focused on the text, and suddenly who it was from didn't matter at all, because the text itself made time stop. Weather cleared. Meet at training site, 0800. No. Oh, God, no, not today. Not on a Sunday. Sundays were off days, except for running. She'd expected to have more warning, so she could hunt down a sedative, or, failing that, somehow land herself in the hospital. God, if you're listening, joking, not joking. She got up and hit the shower, because if she died, she wanted to be clean. Not that it would matter, because if she went splat, there wouldn't be enough of her left to tell if she'd been dirty or not. Still, the impulse was strong. Running water was supposed to be soothing. It failed on that count. After her shower, she braided her hair, because long hair flying all over the place couldn't be good while arrowing toward Earth at a gazillion miles per hour. She choked down half a slice of toast, smeared with peanut butter. Though maybe an empty stomach would be a better idea. What if she threw up in midair? Would the vomit descend at the same rate? So she'd go the whole way down, surrounded by her own puke? Bummer. On the other hand, if she didn't eat, her blood sugar might bottom out, and that wouldn't be good either. She drank just half a cup of coffee because she didn't want to pee on herself in midair either. Another dilemma presented itself. How was she supposed to dress for plunging to her death? A quick check of the weather confirmed that the sky was clear, and the temperature was chilly, though it would warm up all the way to mildly pleasant by the middle of the afternoon. This wasn't a question she was going to text to any of the guys, because they'd never let her live it down. That was based on the assumption that she'd survive the day, so that thought was vaguely reassuring. In the end, she put on some long silk underwear she'd bought her first winter in D.C., then dressed mostly as usual for a training day, in cargo pants, a sweatshirt, but sneakers instead of boots, because her boots were speed-laced and jump boots weren't. She tried not to think of things the hooks on her boots could get hung on, during a jump. Finally, she grabbed her North Face pull-on snow cap and thought she'd done the best she could. Trying to focus on the pros and cons of being clean and well-dressed, while she was terrified out of her mind and might be dying soon, didn't work very well as a means of distraction. She arrived half an hour early and sat in the car with her head resting on the steering wheel, praying under her breath, and wondering if she should call her mom, in case she never had another chance. No. Because if she talked to her mom now, she might lose it and blurt out everything about the GO team and the drone, which was way classified, and being forced to parachute. And that would be bad. A tap on her driver's side window made her shriek and jump and bump her knee hard on the steering column, which made her cuss. Levi stood there laughing. She hated him. Hated the way his laugh lit up his face, white teeth flashing, dark eyes crinkled at the corners. How dare he laugh, after everything? She opened her car door and shoved it hard, banging it against his knee. Ow. He moved out of range, leaning down to rub his knee and glare at her.
Watch what you're doing.
She returned the glare as she got out and slammed the door. I did, and I enjoyed it very much, thank you. It was funny. You know, like when I banged my knee and you laughed. For some reason, he seemed to be in a good mood. The right side of his mouth quirked up in a half smile, and he said,
Fair enough. Maybe he was in a good mood because he thought today would be her swan song, and even if she survived, she might say she was done. As if she would give him the satisfaction. She might die, but she wouldn't quit. Boom arrived in his big King Cab pickup and interrupted whatever might have followed, whether it would have been an argument or stony silence. It could have gone either way. Levi said,
"We're riding with Boom,"
and strode toward the truck. Gina trudged along behind him, not willing to trot to keep up with those long strides. She walked differently these days, using longer, more efficient strides herself, but no way could she keep up with someone who was 6'4". He should have stopped growing at a reasonable height, damn him. She didn't even like the way he breathed. He got in front with Boom, and she boosted herself into the back seat. Boom's truck wasn't as high as Levi's, maybe because he had a wife and two kids who also rode in the truck. But these days she wouldn't have had any problems anyway. Legs of steel, she thought triumphantly. And although that was an exaggeration, she was in the best shape of her life. Maybe the legs of steel had enough coil and strength to them to keep her from breaking her neck when she landed. Or maybe she could use them to kick Levi out of the plane. "I like your truck," she chirped to Boom, knowing her tone would irritate the shit out of Levi. And maybe Boom, too. But Levi was her target, and Boom would have to be collateral damage. It doesn't look like a pouty Darth Vader owns it. Pouty. Boom coughed to disguise what was likely a laugh, and Levi slowly swiveled his head to give her a basilisk stare. She gave him a sweet, very insincere smile. This was fun. For a few seconds, she could forget that her knees were knocking together. The landing strip Boom drove to was in rural Virginia, surrounded by farmland. The strip wasn't busy, not this early, though a few planes were tied down beside a large, rusty Quonset hut, with a rough but serviceable wooden addition jutting out to the left. Two other vehicles were there, but no one was in sight. A twin otter sat on the strip, and a fit-looking guy in jeans and a leather jacket was slowly going around the plane, examining every exterior detail. Just a few months ago, she'd have thought a twin otter was a pair of cute critters, but now she not only recognized it, she knew it was considered one of the best planes for jumping. Yay for her. If only her test was on paper instead of practical experience, she'd ace the damn thing.
"I rigged the chutes myself," Boom said to Levi. "Most I've ever done at one time." "We'll probably need them all," Levi replied.
Meaning they were going to keep at it until she either made a jump or died? Probably. Surely they wouldn't have time for more than two or three jumps. Would they? She was the only trainee, though, and they were the only jumpers on the plane. They'd be limited by the time it would take the plane to take off, climb to altitude, then land again, plus however much time it took to pick them up from the landing zone. Her heartbeat kicked into another gear, hard and fast. They were really going to do this. "Where's the landing zone?" she asked, hoping it was miles away because that would slow everything down.
"Next field over," Levi said, jerking a thumb to the right. "I would have made it here, but there'll be other planes landing and taking off. I've arranged for us to be picked up."
Of course he had. Why couldn't they just wait in the field until the plane landed and he could pick them up? That would have killed some time. But no, Levi had to be efficient, so they could get in more torture sessions. Frantically, she pulled up the memory of ziplining. Her stomach had been in her throat then, too. Stepping off into nothing and trusting the line to hold her had required all her nerve and gumption. But once she'd taken that first step, everything had been okay. Maybe this would be like that. The guys had said it was, though they could be lying. Maybe she'd automatically focus on what she was doing, rather than what was happening. Maybe it would be okay. The sky was a big blue bowl, completely cloudless, as if trying to make up for the days of rain. Too bad, because she had really prayed hard for that rain to continue for the next year or so. There was a chilly breeze, but nothing that would interfere, so there was no help on that front. The weather was not cooperating. Gina forced herself to take slow, steady breaths, trying to slow her heartbeat. The air smelled fresh and crisp, tinged with the smell of fuel. A few birds were calling back and forth. Not the mad singing they did in spring, but a kind of desultory, "We're here" notice. Boom got the harnesses from the back of his truck, and Gina began gearing up. She was concentrating on getting the straps straight and in the right place, so it took her a minute to realize Levi, not Boom, was putting on the other harness. She stopped. "I thought Boom was jumping with me."
"I'm not certified for tandem jumps," Boom replied. "Ace is."
"Oh, shit," she said, so dismayed that she said it aloud.
"Got a problem with it?"
Levi asked, his tone hard. "Well, I do trust Boom not to cut me loose in midair if I vomit on him." Oh, Lord, she was going to be harnessed to Levi. She didn't want to be even this close to him, much less strapped so closely to him they'd essentially be spooning. Boom snorted a laugh, and even Levi gave a quick grin.
"You won't vomit," he said.
And it was as much of a command as it was a reassurance. She pulled on her knit hat, and Boom said,
"That won't stay on."
Sighing, she tucked it back into her pocket, and instead stuffed the thick braid of her hair down the back of her sweatshirt. "Why won't it stay on?"
"Because we'll be going 120 miles an hour when we leave the plane," Levi said.
She blanched and tried not to think about it. Her heart started that pounding again. Was it possible to die from fright? She might not have to go splat. Levi might flare his parachute for a perfect landing with a corpse strapped to his chest. The idea was ghoulish enough that she felt a bit comforted, and the panic subsided. With luck, the experience would scar Levi so much he'd never be able to jump again. Would that be justice or what? She was kind of in a daze as they boarded the plane, and the two engines coughed to life. The Twin Otter was roomier on the inside than she'd expected. Benches lined each side, and she slid onto one of them, buckled herself in. Boom closed the door, and he and Levi took their seats. Levi was right beside her, so close his left leg was touching hers. Silently, she shifted her legs away from him. The pilot, who Boom had introduced as Air Bud, because his nickname really was Bud, released the brakes, the engine noise changed, and the plane began moving. The co-pilot was Bud's wife, a jumpsuit-wearing redhead with a broad grin and a lot of freckles. Gina wanted to go forward and commiserate with her about what jerks men were. But Boom wasn't a jerk, and she didn't know about Bud. So she clenched her hands on the edge of the bench and stayed where she was. The plane lifted away from the earth and began a steady climb. Levi got to his feet, and he and Boom began making preparations that Gina didn't watch. She was too busy trying to catch regular breaths and talk her stomach down out of her throat. Her mouth was dry, her legs trembling. She didn't have to watch to know when the door was opened, because cold air rushed through the cabin. She had dreaded a lot about all the training stuff, but she hadn't been actively frightened. Now she was. No, frightened was too mild a word. She was terrified, and it wasn't something she could talk herself out of. Then Levi sat down beside her again, tapped her on top of the head, and said,
"Time."
Mutely, she looked up at him, the details of what she was supposed to do lost somewhere in the fog of silent panic. He waited, but no matter how frantically she searched her brain, no details surfaced. She was here. She was about to be forced out of the plane. Nothing else came to mind. An unreadable expression flickered across his face. Silently, he scooped her up and sat her on his lap, her back to him, her legs straddling his.
"Whoa."
Gina jerked, as shocked as if he'd thrown water in her face. Physical sensations rushed in, the heat and hardness of his body against her back and under her butt and thighs, his breath on her hair, all of it tangling with fear and numbness and throwing everything off kilter because no one component fit with any of the others. What the hell was he doing? And right in front of Boom. Clumsily, none of her muscles working in coordination, she tried to shove herself off his lap. He grunted and clamped his right arm around her hips and hauled her back down.
"Be still," he growled. "This is the easiest way to get us harnessed together."
harnessed, together, right. Shaking, breathing hard, she tried to relax. He fastened their harnesses together in four places, on each hip and each shoulder. She was pulled back snugly against the muscled wall of his chest. Glancing down, she saw his spread legs between hers, which spread her legs that much wider. The visual was another shock to her system, sharpening her awareness of him to the point of near pain.
"I'll be handling everything," he said in her ear. "You're just along for the ride, though after we're under canopy, you can take the toggles and steer us to the LZ. Remember, tuck your head back into my shoulder and curl your legs upward between mine. Got it?"
He was telling her things she'd already gone over during the ground training, but the repetition was good because she wasn't able to think. She had never been so scared in her life, and the dread was getting worse, not better. Maybe the actual jump out of the plane was the worst, like the guy said, and once she was in the air, everything would get better. Or maybe her heart would explode from the terror. That seemed more likely.
"We'll free fall for about a minute. It's like floating. You'll have no sense of speed other than the wind. When we get to 2,500 feet, I'll pop the chute. It'll jerk like hell when it opens. Pull us up and back, so don't panic. I'll ease the straps so it's more comfortable for you. Then it's an easy ride down."
Don't panic? Was it possible to panic more once one was already panicked? Like a re-panic or a double layer of panic?
"Goggles."
A pair dangled in front of her and she put them on. Goggles. So it was really about to happen.
"You'll do fine," Boom said reassuringly. "Ace has you."
Then the traitor helped Levi shift with her over to the open door. Lips trembling, she looked up at Boom and started to say something, maybe even beg him to help her. But before she could make a sound, Levi heaved them through the open door of the plane, plunging into hell, face first. Gina jerked and stiffened, instantly engulfed in a screaming wind, her head forced back against Levi's shoulder, while her eyes rolled wildly around so that the brown and green of the earth flipped sickeningly with the merciless blue bowl of the sky. She was screaming too, along with the wind. Deep, hoarse screams that scraped her throat raw. It was all too much, worse than she'd expected, more than she could handle. The fear she'd been halfway controlling seemed to explode inside her. A great black force that blew out of her chest and expanded in a split second to swallow her whole. And she fell into the black.
"Gina! Babe! Wake the fuck up!"
The black didn't want to give her up. She didn't want it to give her up. She wanted to stay right there, insensate and safe. She slowly resurfaced to the distant sound of Levi bellowing the command to wake up at her. The sound got closer and closer as consciousness returned, and she opened her eyes to stare dazedly around. Her head bobbled to the side, but she was able to catch herself, and she realized they were still in the air, still going down. She jerked again, pushing herself back against him as if she could force herself through his body, anything to put distance between her and the approaching ground.
"It's okay. We're under canopy. We aren't falling."
He kept repeating that, the words meaningless at first, but after a few times they began making sense, and she tilted her head back to stare at the huge white mushroom blooming overhead. The movement moved her head against Levi's chest, and she saw the underside of his chin, his strong jaw, deeply tanned and bristled, because he hadn't shaved that morning. Odd how that seemed so obvious, and why she noticed it all when she felt so sick. Her heart was slamming against her ribcage with such force she could feel her bones vibrating, and she thought she might vomit after all. The fear seemed to come in uncontrollable waves, barely giving her time to catch a breath before she was swamped again. A high-pitched keen of distress vibrated in her throat.
"Babe, you're all right."
His deep voice was right beside her ear, so close she could feel his breath in her hair.
"Here. Take the toggles."
"No." She thrashed her head back and forth, shrinking from the suggestion. The toggles represented this whole experience, and it was as bad as she'd feared it would be. It was awful. She'd never passed out before, but now she felt as if she might faint again. And she didn't care what Levi thought. or if this got her booted out of training. All she wanted was to be on the ground and all in one piece. Normally, her determination would carry her through a sticky situation. But this wasn't just sticky. It was horrifying beyond her imagining. She'd felt the same way about bungee jumping. Not going to do it. No way, no how.
All right, you don't have to.
That rough voice was oddly soothing. Maybe he thought he could afford to be kind now that she was very likely out of the program. Strange how now that they were actually floating instead of plummeting, she could tell they were moving, going down. At least she was upright instead of face down, staring at her death. She could look out at the horizon, but she didn't, because what was below her had her in an unholy grip. To escape it, she closed her eyes, not wanting to see the ground getting closer and closer. Her whole body felt limp, her muscle tone gone, and despite herself, she let her head fall back against his shoulder again. Oh, dear God. She was held in place by four buckles. Four. Levi was the one who wore the parachute harness, not her. If the buckles failed or the straps broke, she was gone.
When I tell you, lift your legs straight out so they aren't in my way when we land, he said.
That kind note was still in his tone. She hated him for being nice in the face of her failure. If he'd been this way from the beginning... No, it was probably better that he hadn't. She didn't want to like him at all. She forced her eyes open because it seemed cowardly not to. The minutes crawled, but at the same time the ground was coming up way too fast. Her breath began hitching in her throat again, and her heartbeat was so fast she was essentially limp in the harness. Details on the ground began to take on sharp clarity. Individual leaves on the trees swam into focus, and Levi said,
"Legs up!"
in that bark of command she was more accustomed to. Her body obeyed, as she had obeyed so many of his orders. Her thigh muscles shook, but she lifted her legs so she was in an L shape. It was like seeing her car was about to crash, but being unable to stop it. The ground was rushing toward them now, a blurred impression of the black asphalt road, the brown grass, a red cross painted on the ground to make the LZ. A jolt shook her in the harness as Levi touched down, his powerful legs absorbing most of the shock. He made a couple of running steps, then stopped as casually as if falling thousands of feet in the air was an everyday occurrence, and began unhooking them. She was so numb she couldn't quite absorb that they were on the ground, safe, without any broken bones or anything. She hadn't smashed herself into red mist. The harness latches released, and she began dropping, sliding down his body. He caught her, one steely arm around her waist, and said,
"Put your feet down now."
Okay, she thought, everything feeling distant, even herself, as if her mind had disconnected from her body. Still, she put her feet down, and he bent down enough to stand her on the ground, then immediately turned around to begin gathering the canopy. Gina sat down. She didn't have any choice about it because her legs felt like noodles, but at least she sat instead of collapsing full length. The chill damp of the ground soaked into her pants, and in the length of time it took Levi to gather and secure the canopy, she began shivering. Wet ground was soft, she thought, and soft ground was good. She pulled off her goggles and drew her knees up so she could rest her forehead on them and close her eyes. Shutting out the world was a relief. If she could have deafened herself, she would have, to create a total cocoon. But she couldn't, and sound still intruded. She could hear Levi talking. At first she thought he was talking to himself, then realized he was on a headset talking to Boom. Likely they'd been in communication the whole humiliating, terrifying time. Boom knew how pathetically she'd failed. She didn't care. For once in her life, she didn't care that she hadn't been able to make herself handle what was in front of her. Parachuting was going to be her Waterloo, because she couldn't make herself go through that again. I have to. The inner whisper came up from her depths. She tried to push the words away, because there had never been anything she'd run into before that had so terrified her beyond functioning. Sure, she'd been scared before. She'd hit obstacles before that she hadn't thought she could get over. But she kept at it with dogged persistence, that maybe you went beyond the bounds of good sense. This was different. This was fear on a primal level she hadn't experienced before. This almost reached the level of I'd rather slit my wrist than do that again. But even below that, at the cellular level, was something that made her take a deep breath and face the awful truth. She had to. She heard Levi's footsteps come closer, felt him looming over her, blotting out the faint warmth of the sun, and leaving her even more chilled, there on the wet ground. Forcing her lungs to pull in enough air to speak, she raised her colorless face from her knees and looked up at the big man who stood looking down at her. "Let's go again," she said. 10. Levi squatted down in front of her, his powerful thighs stretching the fabric of his cargo pants, those dark eyes boring into her as if he wanted to pin her to a board, like he was some bug collector and she was the bug.
"You fainted."
Accusation number one. She knew there were more coming. And she hated the way he said that. Faint sounded so much more wussy than passed out. She put her cheek down on her knees again, picked up a small stick and scraped at the winter dead grass with it. "I won't again."
"Really? How you gonna stop it?"
He sounded derisive.
"Same way fighter pilots do, I guess. Grunt and stuff like that."
She was kind of vague on the procedure, but she could look up the details on the internet. She knew there was grunting involved.
"They grunt to force oxygen to their brains. Lack of oxygen isn't your problem."
No, sheer terror was. She didn't know if she could grunt long enough and deep enough to overcome that. Though maybe if she focused intensely on the grunting, she wouldn't pay attention to being in midair and falling at 120 miles an hour, with the possibility of both the main chute and the reserve malfunctioning, in which case she and Levi would die together, and the equal possibility that he'd undo the harness buckles and let her drop. Yeah, she had to stop thinking about that last one.
"You screamed too."
Accusation number two. Had she? Oh, yeah. She kind of remembered screaming as if she were being dismembered. Dang. There was no denying it. She hunched a shoulder as if to say, "So what?" and kept her mouth shut.
"You didn't tell us you're afraid of heights."
Accusation number three. Annoyed, which was nice because it meant she was feeling something other than terror and humiliation, and the even worse fear of failure. She lifted her head and glared at him.
"I'm not afraid of heights. I'm afraid of falling to my death. Big difference."
His mouth quirked again in the way she couldn't tell if it was a smile or a smirk. Going with smirk was a safer bet, because generally Levi didn't smile at her. She both wished he would and wished he wouldn't. Nothing was simple where Levi was concerned.
"Your ass is getting wet sitting on the ground."
Was that an accusation or an observation? Maybe both.
"There's no getting to it. It got wet right away." "Is this your way of hiding that you pissed your pants?"
Not as outraged as she normally would have been, she still mustered the spirit to shoot out a foot and kick his boot.
"I passed out. I didn't pee my pants and neither did I vomit. So there."
He laughed and effortlessly rose to his feet, extending a big hand down to her.
"Come on. Here comes our ride."
She didn't need his help getting up. Even though she felt shaky and weak and numb and grateful all at once. The grateful was because he'd made her mad with the last comment, and she had so needed that relief. She tucked her left foot under her, pushed up with her right foot, got her left leg under her to balance her weight, and stood without aid. Back at the beginning, she'd practiced that move over and over, because she'd seen how easily the guys got up from the ground, not holding on to anything, just getting their feet under them and standing. Part of it was just technique, but the rest was pure muscle tone, and now she had that muscle tone. What she didn't have was nerves of steel, as witnessed by the last 10 hours. Just to check, she pulled out her phone and looked at the time. Crap. Barely half an hour had passed since the Twin Otter had lifted off the runway. It felt like 10 hours. Maybe part of hell was that the time seemed to pass so slowly, in which case she knew that hell involved both Levi and parachutes. A pickup truck pulled up to the LZ, and she straightened her spine. She had to do this. She had to ignore the nausea in the pit of her stomach, and the way her heart had started that sickening pound, pound, pound again. Because the only other option was unthinkable. Silently, she followed Levi, every moment so weighted with reluctance that her legs felt as if they weighed 100 pounds each. There was something genetically wrong with men, she thought as she watched Levi striding in front of her, every inch of his big body infused with confidence. It likely never occurred to him to be petrified at the thought of parachuting. It would have been just one more skill to acquire to make him as self-sufficient and lethal as possible. Sometimes jumping out of a plane was the best way to get to his target. Therefore, he would jump out of a plane. She'd seen him practice his hand-to-hand skills, practice live ammo shooting, push his body to what seemed like superhuman lengths. He dedicated himself to being as well-trained and prepared as possible. All the team members trained constantly, so they'd be ready for whatever mission came their way. Sometimes it was nothing more action-filled than surveillance or intelligence gathering, but they trained at that with as much dedication as they did everything else. She, too, had devoted herself to the training. What she did with Tweety the drone would help keep them alive when they were in dangerous situations, as well as doing some of the normal surveillance missions. But she got the sense that during the mission, the guys would push themselves to and past the point of death, kind of like a racehorse. She'd read that stallions would run themselves to death in a race, but mares wouldn't. That they had the good sense to stop before they reached self-destruction. The revelation exploded in her brain. That was it. She was a mare, and Levi was a stallion. He'd willingly jump out of a plane, and she had better sense. She felt much better about herself now, except for the fact that she had to forget she had good sense and jump out of a plane like the stupid stallions did. They climbed into the pickup, and the driver took them back to the airstrip. The Otter had just landed and was maneuvering back into position for takeoff again. The bottom dropped out of her stomach, just watching it. Pound, pound, pound. Was it possible for her heart to beat so hard it bruised itself against her sternum? Icy sweat drenched her. Could Levi smell her fear? Could he tell how utterly hopeless she felt? Or was she somehow projecting a can-do facade that kept him from seeing the truth? The Otter swung around, propellers a blur, and she saw Boom crouching in the open door. Even from where they were, she could tell his expression was grim. Maybe he'd expected her performance to be better after his tutelage. She squirmed inwardly because she hated being a disappointment to anyone, especially to someone she liked as much as she liked him. She approached the plane with her head down. Ahead of her, Levi effortlessly vaulted into the plane. Boom leaned down and extended his hand. She took it and he pulled her up. Levi gave her a long, cool look, and she remembered how she'd declined to take his hand. Well, tough. It would take a long time before she forgot how nastily he'd declined her invitation, and showing up anyway didn't make her feel any better about him. Neither did anything about the current situation. I passed out, she mumbled.
I heard.
Boom shook his head.
You should have said you're afraid of heights.
She didn't feel like going into the difference between being afraid of heights and being afraid of falling, so she just shrugged. I can do this. Even to herself, her voice sounded weak, kind of like a sickly frog, more raspy than usual. Maybe that was from all the screaming.
Let's get this over with,
Levi said and closed the door with a loud thunk. Meaning it was her last chance? It couldn't be. Boom said he'd packed more parachutes for today than he ever had before, so just 2 attempts wouldn't use up the supply. She didn't know which was most terrifying, the thought of having to do this whole thing again, or Levi tossing her out of training. Realistically, what would happen if she crapped out of training? She'd go back to her old job and earn good money, though not as great as what she was currently pulling down. She'd get her weekends back. She'd be able to go to movies again, hang with her friends, see her family on a regular basis. And she'd be a failure. Gina began shaking as she slid onto a bench and strapped herself in. Once again, Levi took the seat beside her. His scent had changed. He had a more outdoorsy smell now, like cold, fresh air. I guess that was appropriate, given that they'd just fallen through a couple of miles of fresh air. He seemed invigorated by it. His energy level up so far, electricity was practically snapping around him. His big, gloved hands rested on his thighs, relaxed despite the situation. Maybe he was happy. Maybe he was looking forward to this.
She felt nauseated. Hot moisture pooled in her mouth, forced her to swallow.
All too soon, they were in the air again. Pound, pound, pound. Her own heartbeat was loud in her ears, the force of it vibrating through her body. She couldn't breathe. Her chest seemed to have tightened, preventing her lungs from expanding. Was she hyperventilating or suffocating? How could she tell the difference? And did it matter anyway?
Time, Levi said.
What? No, they'd just taken off. They couldn't be more than a couple of hundred feet. Except when Boom opened the door, she saw the earth far below. Why couldn't there be a group of them jumping? Maybe if she saw other people doing it before her turn, she wouldn't be so terrified. Not only that, there would be a delay before her turn. But realistically, even if there were 1,000 people who jumped before she did, she'd still be as terrified. Watching other people do it wouldn't help at all.
Come on, let's get hooked up, he said, giving her thigh a light slap.
The bottom dropped out of her stomach. Resentment burned in her, that now he said something that could be construed as flirtatious. Now he was treating her more like a team member than a team intruder. He must be confident she wouldn't make the cut, that she was going to crap out. And the prospect of getting rid of her put him in a good mood. She'd like to twist his dick off and throw it out of the damn plane, a dick without a parachute, and see if he'd dive out after it. Of course he would. Men would march through hell for their dicks. But wouldn't it be funny if a hawk or something caught the falling dick and carried it off to be eaten? She was so distracted by thinking of the adventures of the flying dick that she didn't move despite his prompt. Should she be ashamed she was thinking of mutilating him? It was just that the part of her that wasn't terrified was so angry at him for everything. For the situation, for being who, what he was. For denying her attraction to him for months now, and him throwing it in her face anyway, so all that effort had been for nothing. Anger and terror didn't make a good mixture, leaving her nauseated and exhausted. Levi's patience lasted a few seconds. Then he hauled her in front of him, with her straddling his legs like before, and hooked their harnesses together. The heat of his body warmed her butt and legs, banishing the wet chill from sitting on the ground. Gina catapulted from thinking of dismemberment to wanting to lie back against that hard, hot strength and let him cradle her while she rested. She was so tired, so scared, and so damn tired of being so damn scared. He began moving them toward the open door. Gina stiffened, planting her feet against the floor and pushing back against him, even though she knew at best resistance would gain her only a few seconds.
Trust me, he said in her ear, his tone rough and low. I won't let anything happen to you.
She tilted her head back and looked up at him. His dark gaze bored into her, intense and something else that she couldn't read. Trust him. She wanted to. She wanted a lot of things where Levi was concerned, and she was suddenly crushed under an avalanche of half-formed thoughts and wants and needs that sent her mind spinning. Before she could process any of it, he muscled them out of the plane and into nothing. It was worse than the first time. The wind tore at her. She knew she was screaming because she could feel the strain in her throat. She tried to take a deep breath, tried to control the terror that had exploded through every cell in her body the moment Levi took them out of the plane, tried to stop screaming. She tried to orient herself, to make sense of sky and earth. She could hear Levi yelling at her, but couldn't tell what he was saying. Not that it mattered, because her body had overruled her mind and, screw reason, was in a battle for survival. She fought him. She fought him with everything she had, her lizard brain telling her that he was the cause of her terror, her impending death. The logic had nothing to do with it. So what if he was the one with the parachute strapped to his back? She fought him anyway, tangling her legs with his, trying to flip him, trying to get away. That was all she wanted, just away, away from this horror of an experience and a complete lack of control. The pressure in her chest was enormous, crushing her. And she was too far gone to tell it was his arms wrapped around her, trying to control her struggles. With his arms down instead of spread for wind resistance, they were an arrow plummeting earthward, a bird without wings, without guidance, without control. An eternity later, exhausted, her body simply gave up and she went limp. Only then did she dimly realize that he had her wrapped up, legs and arms clamped and controlled by his steely limbs. She sucked in a shuddering breath just as they were jerked violently upward. The straps of her harness dug painfully into the jointure of her thighs and across her breasts. The universe swung sickeningly and then settled into proper position, with earth below and sky above. And instead of falling at full speed, they were now swaying under the billowing canopy.
"We're off course to the north," she heard Levi say tersely. "I don't have the altitude to correct. If I try for the LZ, we'll go in the river. There's a field just to the east of the country road. We'll land there."
What was she supposed to say? It wasn't as if she had a choice in any of this. Then he said,
"I'll radio our exact position."
And she realized he was talking to Boom. Everything felt very distant, as if she had disconnected. And Gina realized she had crossed an invisible boundary between terror and numbness. Some people might look around and enjoy the view from their altitude, but she had no interest in the view, other than noting the ground seemed closer than it had the first time they'd gone under canopy. Silently, Levi reached across her chest and loosened the strap with a quick, economical movement, easing the pressure and giving her more comfort in the harness. The backs of his fingers unavoidably brushed against her breast, and she couldn't work up any kind of reaction, good or bad. He wasn't copping a feel, he was taking care of her. Then she saw his gloved hands on the toggles, turning them away from a river that was on the left, and toward a small, overgrown brown field, bordered on two sides by trees, the green of pines mingled with the bare leafless limbs of hardwoods. The field was coming up fast. Levi said,
"Legs up."
And obediently she lifted her legs a couple of seconds before they were on the ground. It was a rough field, not a clear, level landing zone. They went down, with Levi twisting them to the side so he didn't land on top of her. Weeds scraped her face. Hidden rocks and lumps and sticks dug into her side. So what? They were on the ground. The condition of that ground didn't matter. So never mind the boggy smell and the dampness soaking into her clothes. He said,
"Are you hurt?"
Mutely, she shook her head and pulled off her goggles, let them drop. He unhooked their harnesses and said,
"We're down, A-okay."
He rattled off some instructions and distances, then removed his headset and goggles and laid them to the side with her goggles. She closed her eyes and rested, listening to him release the parachute straps and haul it in. What now? She had failed again, miserably, even more miserably than the first time. She hadn't passed out, she'd fought him, which was worse because she could have killed them both.
Nausea churned in her stomach, thinking of the possibilities, all of them bad.
He'd kick her out of training now, he had to. Even if she could somehow convince him to give her another chance, she wasn't at all certain she'd live through another attempt. Even if she was doing a solo jump, at some point her heart would give out, had to, or she'd pass out again. And though the automatic activation device would deploy the parachute if she was unconscious, she wouldn't be able to steer it, and she might slam into a tree or power lines, or even come down on a road in front of a semi. Tears burned against her closed lids, and fiercely she banished them. He might tell her she was finished, but damn if she'd cry over it. His big hand closed on her shoulder and rolled her onto her back. Her eyes flared open and she stared up at him, silhouetted against the pale blue sky. He was close, so close, leaning over her until there was barely a hand's width between their faces. His body heat seared her through their clothing, tempting her to roll closer, to cuddle against all that heat and strength, and just for now let him be a buffer between her and the world. Her pupils expanded until all the amber ring that surrounded them was swallowed up, leaving only the blue outer edge. Her heart rate, which had settled down, began pounding again.
"You could have killed us."
His face was hard and fierce, no give in him at all. "Ready to go again?" she asked in a thin, watery voice. She couldn't manage a smile, but she tried. "Maybe I can do it the next time."
"Which? Kill us? Or make the jump?"
"I'll let it be a surprise," she fired back. He glared down at her.
"Fuck,"
he growled, then jerked her against him and kissed her. A dam broke inside her. For months, Gina had buried her femininity, not letting any hint of flirting or sexuality intrude during the long, long hours and days of training. She hadn't traded on her lack of muscle. She'd concentrated on building some. She hadn't let the guys help her because she was a woman. She'd had to do it on her own for just that reason. For God's sake, she hadn't even worn mascara in so long the tube had probably dried out and needed to be thrown away. She hadn't worn a dress or pretty shoes or had her hair styled. She had made herself as sexless as possible, trying to fit in with the guys and not cause any disturbance in the team force. Then Levi kissed her, and all those inner controls and barriers melted to nothing. The relief was overwhelming, everything in her giving way and reveling in the sense of womanhood that flooded through her. His mouth was everything she hadn't let herself think about, hot and male, his taste going to her head faster than wine on an empty stomach. Pushing him away never entered her mind. From the first moment she met him, something primal and powerful inside her had wanted him, wanted this moment. And from the center of her being, she responded. She wound her arms around his shoulders, one hand sliding around the nape of his neck, and her mouth open under his to give him what he demanded, as well as making demands of her own. A little hum vibrated in her throat, a sound of pleasure and want and need, sending the call into his mouth. He lifted his head, and his gaze burned as it raked over her face.
"Shit. Fuck. I shouldn't do this."
Now she thought about pushing him away, and maybe delivering a punch or two in the process. Damn him. He didn't get to jerk her back and forth like this. But in any physical contest, he was going to win, unless he deliberately let her hit him. And where was the satisfaction in that? Instead, she stretched a little, moving her body against him, and smiled a faint, ironic, and utterly beckoning smile. "Then don't. I'm sure you're strong enough to get away from me." As she spoke, she burrowed her fingers under the hair at his nape and lightly stroked.
If anything, his eyes got even hotter, more intent, and his gaze moved down her body.
She didn't have to glance down to know her nipples were tight and fully erect, the points showing even under her sweatshirt. She could feel their tightness, and the way every breath she took rubbed them against the fabric. A dull red flush darkened his cheekbones. He lifted his gloved hand, clamped the tip of one finger in his teeth, and pulled the glove off. He let the glove drop out of his teeth onto her chest, then slipped his big hand under the band of her sweatshirt, moved up to clasp over one small breast, before sliding over to the other, then back. His rough palm rasped over her tender nipples, making her gasp, bite off a moan.
"From day one,"
he said roughly, and she knew what he meant. From day one, this had been between them. She tried to ignore it, stifle it, forget about it. Evidently, he'd been fighting the same attraction.
"If you weren't on the team, we could..."
He broke off, shook his head.
You're too damn good with the drone. Having you there will give the team a layer of protection we didn't have before. I could have made things so tough for you that you wouldn't make the cut. But that wouldn't be fair to either you or the other guys.
That hasn't changed, she pointed out, her breath coming faster as he continued rubbing her nipples. She turned her head against his shoulder, inhaling the utter maleness of his scent, the warmth of his body heaven on her chilled skin. Pound, pound, pound. He had to feel her heart slamming against his palm, and she didn't care. Months of bruising herself against his hostility and coldness were abruptly washed away, as if they'd never been. Frustration darkened his face.
As long as you're on my team, this can't happen.
Then get your hand out from under my shirt, she snapped, and kissed his throat. A primal sound vibrated in his chest. In one rough movement, he was on top of her, one muscled thigh pushing between her legs to spread them wide. Then he took his place between them. His mouth crushed down on hers again, his tongue making forays that she welcomed with her own tongue. Why should she make things easy on him? He hadn't been easy on her. She wanted him to suffer a little, wanted him to think about what he wasn't getting. She welcomed him with her entire body, wrapping her legs around his hips and lifting her hips to cradle the hard edge of his erection against her softness. A purely sexual pleasure speared through her, an effervescent joy that despite everything she was in his arms and he was in hers, that his hand was on her skin, and for these few stolen minutes, there was nothing else. She strained against him and his hips moved in rhythm, as if there were no layers of clothing between them. He was so heavy despite bracing some of his weight on his arms, and she loved the pressure of him. Everything spun away, the fact that they were lying in a wet field of weeds, that their ride was on the way and would soon arrive, that the only way they could be together was if she failed in the training, and despite herself she would try again, try her best not to fail. For now there was just this, the hard jut of his penis against her just where it needed to be. The fast, spiraling lash of pleasure that started between her legs and spread upward, hot and liquid and so intense she moaned. Briefly, she tried to control her surging response, but just as quickly surrendered to it, because she wanted this moment, this pleasure. She came, driven by months of denial, of being painfully aware of him and having to keep it all under a lid nailed down so securely none of the other guys had any hint of it. He had known, though, maybe by animal instinct, and now, like any predator, he was moving fast on his prey. That was how she felt, like his prey, at his mercy. And she turned the tables on him by giving him all her sensuality, her femaleness, the wildness and completion of her response. She cried out, her voice hoarse from screaming, and dug her nails into his neck. He swore viciously under his breath, but cupped her ass in both hands and lifted her, grinding her, giving her more pressure, more pleasure, riding her through it. She knew what he wanted. He wanted to strip her pants off and get inside her right there in that wet, muddy field, uncaring whether or not their privacy would be interrupted at any minute. She knew because that was what she wanted, with a degree of sexual madness she'd never before experienced. And she wanted more. More Levi, more time, more of his companionship, his touch, his taste, more everything. The hunger, she felt, couldn't be satisfied by occasional stolen moments. She wasn't built that way, to be content with a clandestine relationship. He rolled off her, breathing hard and scowling at the sky. Helplessly, she stared at him, devouring every detail of his features. The strong bone structure of his lean face, the level dark brows, the curve of his mouth. He was a breathtaking man, not because he was handsome, but because he was so damn masculine he practically oozed testosterone. When she thought the word warrior, he was the image she saw, muscled and lethal. He would look as natural with a sword strapped to his back as with a rifle slung over his shoulder. Civilization was a light cloak that he could throw off as needed. He was one of the rough men, as were all the men on the GO teams, ready to do whatever needed doing. She wanted to reach out and touch him, but despite what had just happened between them, she felt constrained. Their makeout session hadn't changed anything. He was still the leader of that team, and he'd do whatever was necessary for their operational stability, because their very lives depended on it. Her job was to safeguard them as much as possible, to provide an extra set of eyes looking for trouble or gathering information without exposing them to unnecessary danger. If she were in an arguing frame of mind, she'd yell at him that the guys wouldn't mind at all if she and Levi began a relationship. But she'd be lying. It would make a difference. The others would subconsciously begin looking for signs of favoritism, which would foster resentment and a lack of trust. Any argument between her and Levi would necessarily cause tension among the others. That was just how team dynamics worked. A disagreement between any two members was one thing, but throw sex into the mixture, and it became combustible. She turned her head and stared at the sky as grimly as he was. And for the same reason. As things stood, she had two choices. She could quit training and have Levi, for how long was up for debate. Or she could stay on the team and deal with the bitter truth that they couldn't be together. She couldn't quit. Doing so would betray everything she was, every sense of self. Maybe she drove herself past what a sane person would do, but didn't the guys also do that? Being who they were, doing what they did, required more of them than, say, a regular 9-to-5 job. She had been happy with that 9-to-5 job, but now this was her reality. And she couldn't turn her back on it. She rolled to her knees and picked up her goggles. Her clothes were wet all along her back and on her right side. Her elbows and knees had mud on them, evidently from when they'd landed and skidded along the ground. Her forehead was beginning to sting, and she suspected there was a scrape there. Bits of weed clung to her braid, which was no longer stuffed down the back of her shirt. Fingering her face, she found some dirt and debris, and wiped it off as best she could. Silently, Levi got to his feet and began gathering in the parachute, pulling it the rest of the way to him. She picked up his goggles and the glove he'd discarded. "Here," she said, and tossed the glove to him. He released the parachute with his right hand and fielded the glove one-handed, pulled it back on. The pickup rolled to a stop on the shoulder of the road, about 100 yards away. Gina began trudging toward it, gearing herself up to do this one more time, and one more time after that, if necessary. Whatever it took. 11. She was as white as the cliched sheet. Levi had to stop himself from picking her up and lifting her into the plane. She looked so damn little and dispirited. Not that she truly was either of those things, but his protective instinct was kicking in harder than ever. He'd kissed her. He'd held her under him and felt the slenderness of her bones. He'd made her come. His dick and balls and brain, and hell yeah, he realized his brain was third on that list, were all joined in a savage fight because two of them were insisting she was now his, and his fuck-ass stupid brain was telling them they couldn't have her. His sense of frustration was so great, he wanted to go all Hulk and pick up the damn plane and throw it. At the same time, God, it had been good, even though his balls were aching. The taste of her, her breath on his face, the way she caught on fire and responded with everything in her, no holding back, no gains, just Gina babe, as honest and straightforward as ever. At last, he'd gotten his hands on her, on those sweet little breasts. She wasn't wearing a bra. He'd almost come in his pants when he'd felt nothing but smooth skin and tight nipples. If he ever got that far again, he swore to God nothing would stop him. Next time, he'd get her naked and get inside her, and to hell with the consequences. Which meant he didn't dare take that risk again. Not as long as she was part of the team. Fuck. As soon as Boom saw her, he shot a concerned look at Levi as they climbed aboard the Twin Otter for the third time. Levi knew how he felt. As bad as she'd reacted the first time, at least she hadn't done anything worse than faint.
An unconscious babe, was Helen gone better than a babe who was fighting him as hard as she could? He'd been on the point of knocking her out so he could safely deploy the